ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Text 20. Kaler Durvishaha Krodhas Tamastam Anuvartate తమసా గ్రస్యతే పుంసాస్ చేతనా వ్యాపిని ద్రుతం కలిర్దుర్విషః క్రోధాస్ తమస్తం అనువర్తతే తమసా గ్రస్యతే పుంసాస్ చేతనా వ్యాపిని ద్రుతం కలిర్ దుర్విషః క్రోధాస్ తమస్తం అనువర్తతే తమసా గ్రస్యతే పుంసాస్ చేతనా వ్యాపిని ద్రుతం కలిర్ దుర్విషః క్రోధాస్ తమస్తం అనువర్తతే తమసా గ్రస్యతే పుంసాస్ చేతనా వ్యాపిని ద్రుతం కలే ఫ్రమ్ క్వారల్ దుర్విషః ఇంటోలరబుల్ క్రోధః ఎంగర్ తోమః ignorance. Tam, that anger. Anuvartate, follows. Tamasa, by ignorance. Grasyate, is seized. Pumsa, of a man. Chetana, the consciousness. Vyapini, broad. Drutam, swiftly. Translation. From quarrel arises intolerable anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. This ignorance quickly overtakes a man's broad intelligence. And once again, from quarrel arises intolerable anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. This ignorance quickly overtakes a man's broad intelligence. And please repeat. From quarrel arises intolerable anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. This ignorance quickly overtakes a man's broad intelligence. Purport by the Disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The desire for material association arises from one's propensity to deny that everything is God's energy. Falsely imagining material sense objects to be separate from the Supreme Lord, one desires to enjoy them. Such desire gives rise to conflict and quarrel in human society. This conflict inevitably gives rise to great anger, which makes human beings become foolish and destructive. Thus, the actual goal of human life is quickly forgotten. Okay, so today I've been asked to give a class, and because nobody else was here, and as the maxim says, the fool is revealed when he opens his mouth, right? So let me see what I'm saying. So today's verse continues the theme, and this chapter is called Explanation of the Vedic Path. This actually closely follows what's the verses of the Bhagavad Gita, which go along, they explain something very similar. So the previous verse said, one who accepts material sense objects as desirable certainly becomes attached to them. From such attachment lust arises, and from this lust creates quarrel among men. And from this quarrel arises intolerable anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. This ignorance quickly overtakes a man's broad intelligence. This briefly explains how living entities embodied in the human form of life, as well as other forms of life actually, become attached to material objects and identify themselves with this material condition, and forgetting one's real identity, they think of themselves as part of this world and of everything in this world belonging to them. Even if we go even further back to the source, this comes from the desire to become Krishna, to replace Krishna, and to enjoy as Krishna. This is why this material world was created by Krishna, so that souls like us who have forgotten, who desired to become Krishna, to experience what it is like to become the master, could actually test that theory and try fulfilling this desire here. Thus, we descend into this material world, and initially we come here as in the very great positions of power. We become Lord Brahma. And there are different versions of that, but a lot of the acharyas conclude that every one of us gets the position of Lord Brahma when we first arrive in the material world. We get to rule, we get to create, we get to, really feel like a master. But as we get attached to the material objects and we become more and more deluded by them, by this attachment, we fall deeper and deeper into the darkness of the material world. And thus we traverse all 8,400,000 forms of life, including worms and stool, the germs, probably viruses as well. So we just, and all of this suffering basically, living in all of these forms of life is nothing but suffering. There is brief relief of suffering, and in a human form of life we sometimes really kind of give ourselves a little bit of a relief, kind of in a humorous condition. We may joke about this, but in reality really it's, we have to tolerate a lot of things, a lot of sufferings. There are three forms of there is obviously the birth, death, disease and old age that everyone has to go through, and then there are amongst those sufferings there is also the sufferings given to us by our own minds, by other living entities, and by the demigods, so by the material conditions. In any case, we still think, despite all of this, we don't, you know, we still think that there is some kind of an advantage to being here in the material world, and we forget every other option. I mean, the available options, such as returning home back to Godhead. We forget how blissful it is to be there serving Krishna in Goloka Vrindavana or in the Vaikuntha planets, serving Lord Vishnu. And we think of ourselves as lords and masters. And from this, we think that it's everything in the material world is something desirable for us. And because we compete with other masters similar to us for resources in the material world, we think of others as our competitors, opponents, and when we can't get something, let's say, you know, we desire a particular thing and somebody else has it, gradually, from this great lust for those material objects, we develop an anger. This anger creates all sorts of problems, starting from kind of petty quarrels, misunderstandings, and ending with great wars. And just in the last century, and the wars is something that's been going on since time immemorial, especially in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, the wars are just they're just going on non-stop. Right now, somewhere in the world, you know, there are probably over 100 different conflicts in different countries happening right now. And if we analyze it from the Vedic point of view, it's nothing but somebody desiring some resources, and the other country, for example, if it's a war between two different countries, it's always about some material objects that they're fighting over. In this century, they say, since every country in the world is really engaged in Ugra Karma, in the horrible works that produce the destruction in the world, so many resources are being destroyed and polluted. They say that in this century, wars over oil, oil we already see, there are wars over oil happening right now and starting in the 20th century probably, but also even over water, drinking water. The wars are going to happen because that's one of the resources that's being greatly reduced by all the pollution and Ugra Karma that the different countries are engaged in. And I've heard, for example, that even the Ganga and other great rivers in the world are gradually drying up. Even though we can still see, you know, the Ganga arriving in Calcutta, the Bay of Bengal. It's still the great quantities of water, but the tributaries of Ganga in the Himalayas and along the way are gradually drying up as well. So it's something that will become the cause of conflict in the world. And everything, I mean, really, what is required for people to fix this issue is to understand one's identity as the spirit soul and the servant of Krishna. We often people say, you know, how is this going to fix the problems? Okay, so you've changed this understanding, you know, so what's going to change? But it's really important. Even the mundane psychologist such as Tony Robbins, for example, they accept that the change in one's identity causes immense change. It projects kind of an immense change in the outer world of every individual. For example, they say, if you try, you know, let's say somebody smokes and they try to give up smoking, it's not possible by any kind of means. They, you know, there are so many different techniques for people to try to quit smoking, but they cannot do it. They keep coming back to it. And the reason for that is because they think of themselves, despite all these different efforts that they put into it, they think of themselves as a smoker. It's still ingrained in the consciousness. So when somebody, let's say, you know, puts a patch or something on their shoulder, I think that's one of the ways they do it, and at the same time they still think of themselves, oh, you know, I'm a smoker, I still, you know, I still crave for those cigarettes, and all of these external means, they mean nothing. They, a week goes by, they take it off, they think of, I kind of stop smoking, and they still think of themselves as smokers, so they, when they see a cigarette, they're still attracted to it. The only way to really fix it is to stop thinking of oneself as a smoker. You should, you know, the person who smokes should think of themselves as a healthy person and develop that mentality. And from that, all sorts of things happen as well. So it means if you're a healthy person, you start eating healthy. You know, as a healthy person, you breathe, and the cigarette is something foreign to you. In the same fashion, if you think of yourself as an enjoyer in the material world, from this, you think that material objects are desirable. You think of yourself still as a lord and master, and others as someone who competes with you for resources. Whereas if you change that identity, and it's really, it's not something artificial like with smoking, for example, it actually is your real identity that, you know, we just forgot what it is. It's covered by this ignorance. But as we start thinking of ourselves as the servant of Krishna, we understand that everything in this world belongs to the Lord. Everything here. And that we must cooperate to serve the Lord, because everybody else is not your competitor. It's actually everybody else is also a servant of Krishna, and we all work to please Krishna. And to please Krishna, of course, we have to follow Krishna's authority and Krishna's words and Krishna's devotees who teach how to please Krishna. This way we stop, we start following the words of the Bhagavad Gita, for example, where we are advised against ugra karma, against, you know, the horrible acts of destruction that we all, I mean, until we become devotees, we all contribute to, even if we don't think of ourselves as doing them. You know, look at any materialist. They kind of often think, well, I'm an environmentalist, I like, you know, I do good things to other people, I don't do anything terrible. But even such a little thing, well, as their diet, you look at what they eat, they don't realize, or even if they do realize what they're doing with that, they just choose to ignore it, choose to ignore the consequences of doing that. So, and a lot of people are not vegetarians. As we know, raising animals for meat, you know, has terrible environmental consequences, ethical consequences, health consequences, etc. And yet, most people who think of themselves as good people still continue doing it. Once again, that's because they think that material objects are desirable, and as an extension of that, that includes other living entities' bodies. Whereas when we become devotees of Krishna, we understand that we cannot, you know, we can't kill other living entities except in a way that is specified by the scriptures. And for people in the mode of goodness, that only allows for the plant life, and only if it's offered to Krishna to sanctify it, and that then once our food is offered to Krishna, it becomes prasadam, and instead of incurring sin, it alleviates sinful conditions, sinful reactions. As it says here in the purport and in the verse, this ignorance and anger overtakes a man's broad intelligence. And once again, you can look at this. I'm sure most of you have experienced the feeling of being angry at somebody or at something. And speaking from experience, I know when I feel angry, it can really cloud my intelligence. You stop, you know, you don't look at any context of what's happening. You don't actually empathize with the other person. You don't understand what they're motivated by. You just think they're trying to take something away from you. And this leads to some terrible choices sometimes. It can destroy relationships between people, or at least strain them really, really badly. So this is the consequence of that ignorance. Okay, so has anyone got anything to add to this or to comment? Maybe some experience with that? Once there was a Vaishnava radio program produced called Radio Rama, and it's all mostly humorous kind of presentation of the Vedas, radio play, and this was illustrated, this kind of sequence of events. It kind of shows a guy seeing a beautiful woman in the street. He starts desiring her, and when she rejects him, he becomes extremely angry and assaults her. Then he's taken away by the police, and it kind of says, okay, so from from the attachment, lust develops from lust, anger develops, and then that leads to, you know, bad karma. It manifests as action. And that is also another point that could be brought up that you all know, but we obviously have, there are a few different levels on which we can act. We can desire something, but it's just mental for now. You know, it comes from the desire in the heart, manifests through the mind. And then, once we actually start acting on a gross level, that is a lot more, I mean, on a physical level, let's say we may desire something, but if we don't act on it, then it's okay. You know, if we can somehow cancel this desire, then, especially in Kali Yuga, we don't really get the reaction, external reaction. But if this is a sinful desire, and then we act on it, then obviously we have to get the bad consequences of it, the reactions, because every action has a reaction. So the method, you could say, to minimize the sinful reactions that we could possibly incur is, even if we do get a sinful inclination of some kind, a desire, is not to act on it, but replace it with a more pure desire. For example, just on a simple level, once again, with foods. We may desire to eat, and I mean, we all desire to eat at some stage, every day, I think, except for some people. Anyway, but if we are in material consciousness, we would go and just eat anything without thinking of how this could be, I mean, of how we can use this in Krishna's service. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita that food consumed without not being part of the sacrifice, not being the product of the sacrifice, I guess, it certainly incurs sinful reactions. Whereas the food that is offered to Krishna, sacrificed to Krishna, so to speak, that frees us from sinful reactions. So, if we connect this desire with Krishna, and when we cook, we think of Krishna and desire to please Him, then once we offer it to Krishna, it, as I said, it doesn't cause this deeper entanglement in the material world. So, before we act, that's what follows from it, is that when we have a desire for something, we have to think of a way to connect it to Krishna somehow. And if we can't, we have to find something else, you know, to desire that we can relate to Krishna. And obviously the highest object of desire is Krishna Himself. But while we're in the material world, we're going to have some desires always, you know. So we may desire a house, for example, for our family. We have to connect it to Krishna, dovetail it in Krishna consciousness, and convert it into a temple. Every householder should install some deities, or at least some, you know, the deities in the form of pictures, for example, of the Panchatattva altar, and make that the center of their daily life. We should greet the deities in the morning somehow. We should chant with the deities. And obviously if you live in a temple, that's a lot easier because your life is connected to Krishna, so that's great. And I mean, that's just, you can't really step outside of Krishna consciousness very much while you're in the temple, but as a householder, yeah, we have to make a conscious effort to do this. We have to remember to make the deities and the devotees the center of our daily activities somehow. Even if we work, and which most householders have to do, and we have to do all sorts of other things, try to connect it to Krishna somehow or other, and that will elevate the consciousness and stop us from thinking of material objects as desirable. And all these things described in these verses will be minimized eventually. We won't experience anger as much, and therefore there won't be as much conflict in our lives. You know, they will become harmonious and Krishna conscious eventually. Okay, so any other comments or possibly questions?
Can anger be used for Krishna consciousness?
Yes, absolutely. It's a good question. So can anger be used for Krishna consciousness? Yes, it can be. And Arjuna is a great example of how anger could be used for Krishna. Krishna engaged Arjuna's anger propensity in fighting for Krishna. Now, while this is the case, there are only certain circumstances in which you can really use anger for Krishna, and that is, okay, there is that fighting. Sometimes it has to be converted into something a little bit more, into other forms, so to speak. You know, let's say these days, if somebody insults a devotee, most of the time you're not going to, you know, take out a sword and go and, you know, cut off this person's head, right? Or you, if you don't have a sword, you're not about to go and start fighting with that person, you know. Unless your life is really in danger or something like that, and this is just, you know, some kind of self-defense, or you're protecting somebody physically. You have to, these days, if you have to engage your anger, let's say, what can you be angry at, for example? You know, just, do you have an example?
iPhone 4 is not
like this. Well, okay, so I guess this wouldn't be something that you would necessarily engage, you know, that kind of anger you probably wouldn't engage in Krishna service, unless you say, okay, iPhone doesn't have any Krishna conscious applications, you know, what's with that? You're a developer? Write some. You know, that's one way. I mean, but that wouldn't be so much the anger, but the creative propensity, you know, in Krishna service. But yeah, so you have to be careful as far as the anger is concerned. It's not one of the most useful feelings that you can have. So, as you can see from these verses, most of the time it leads to delusion and leads to some kind of a fall down. So, I mean, you have to consult with your spiritual master. That is another point. You have to find a spiritual master if you don't have one yet. I'm just speaking in general, because they can help you. That's advanced devotee of Krishna can help you distinguish between, you know, how we think we can engage something such as the sense of anger, that feeling of anger. And he can redirect, he or she can redirect you in a proper way to really make something Krishna conscious. Or if you've got that anger, a spiritual master can teach you how to dissipate the anger when it's not necessary, or when to summon it when it is necessary to engage it in Krishna's service. Yeah, but otherwise you can, you know, if you think about it, so many things can be used in Krishna consciousness. We may be dissatisfied with some things, you know, in consultation with our spiritual master or with senior devotees, we can engage it somehow, even if it's an iPhone. So, all right, I think I'll finish here. Oh, you've got another point?
Krishna, you're talking about Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't we attracted?
Really, the only reason why we're not attracted right now is because we don't know enough about Krishna, and that's what I think right now. You know, that's what I've heard from my spiritual master as well. It's a result of our ignorance. We don't know. Right now, we're covered over by all sorts of other things. But if you start absorbing yourself in the qualities of Krishna, in Krishna's names, in his pastimes, they are so attractive. They can really pull you in. And I'll give you an example. The other day, I got an interesting kind of means to engage myself in Krishna's pastimes. There is this cartoon called Little Krishna that was produced in India recently. And ISKCON devotees were involved in actually making it. So all the stories in it are scripturally based. And I must say I couldn't stop watching it because it was really attractive, you know. Obviously this is just it's the representation of Krishna using the material means, but because it's connected to Krishna, it's related, it's directly about Krishna, it's very, very attractive. And you kind of witness Krishna's pastimes. And the same thing happens when you properly read Krishna book and other Krishna conscious story books, for example, Ramayana, Mahabharata. They are written in such a way that they are meant to attract our intelligence. And Srimad Bhagavatam obviously is the best, it's the spotless Purana. And the 10th canto, as we progress through the different cantos, you know, the pastimes of Lord Krishna have been summarized so nicely by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book. And just to kind of in relation to what you said, why aren't we attracted to this? It's because we don't know enough. As we hear more about Krishna, it becomes more and more attractive to us. His pastimes, his qualities, his you know, pranks and all sorts of things. And then as we meditate on this, our consciousness becomes purified, and eventually after some time we will return to the spiritual world, because that's what separates us from the spiritual world, really, right? It's that we're not attracted right now. When we are attracted, and thus we act in accordance with that, we as good as in the spiritual world. That's it. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.